Welcome to the Moments Matter podcast, where empty nesting mom Sonia and her adulting daughter Julia, that's me, discuss what it takes to have healthy, faithful relationships with your teens all the way into their adult years. Tune in each week as we pick a life moment and talk about why it already matters and how we can take it to the next level with actionable purpose and true joy, even when it's hard. I'm Julia, and today I'm on with my mom, Sonia, like normal, but then we also have Jennifer Outerkirk on today, which I call her Miss Jen, but mom, I'm sure you don't call her Miss Jen.
No, I don't call her Miss Jen. I call her Jen.
So welcome to the podcast, Miss Jen.
Thank you.
So how did you guys meet?
We don't remember.
I don't even, Jen,
do you remember who asked who? Like,
I don't. I just remember Saturday morning waking up and we were at Seco State Park in our trailers. Right. I don't remember how we got there. It's like just a spot in time that started.
That's hilarious to me.
It was a great, that's exactly what I, well, the part that I remember is looking out my, cabin door windows and like, is she out there yet? Does she have her makeup on? Does she have her hair brushed? What is she wearing? Like, what kind of camping buddy is she going to be? Is she going to be a camping buddy?
And well, go ahead.
I think you might have a similar story.
Yeah, I also, because we were always, when we saw each other at school, we were always very, you know,
put together
moms. And neither of us really wanted to be that on a camping weekend, but we weren't sure if we had to meet the other's expectations. So we were both, I think, relieved and glad and thought this could work when we realized we both were in full grunge camping gear. And yes, I have a sign that still hangs in my bathroom three RVs later that says, mm-hmm, camping hair, don't care, from Sonia.
Yes. I saw those. Aww. I grabbed those. I got one for her and one for me because we became camping buddies way back when. The connection we have, though, is through our kids.
Yes. Yeah.
Julia and Jen's, you know, daughter are best friends, lifelong friends from school, like elementary school on through, right? Late elementary is when you started getting closer.
Yeah, it's so funny. You guys have similar stories. I have a similar memory, and I think Alyssa would say the same thing. Like, our memory, all of a sudden, we're just like in a bus and it's late after a volleyball game in sixth grade, and we just hit it off and we were talking about random stuff and giggling, and that was when it all started. I have no idea. I don't really remember her before that, and I don't think she really remembers me before that. Like, we were in the same classes a couple of times, but we had, like, mutual friends, but we weren't friends. So,
well, and then Jenna, your younger sister, was in Brandon's class, and we did know Jenna, and that is part of the story we're going to talk about today, because you can't not know Jenna, A.
Yeah.
And B, she was one of the sweetest children and a huge help to Brandon in the early years. So, and they also are still good buds,
and it's great for both.
Yeah, they are. Which is so cool. It's so cool that our families have just kind of grown up together. It feels like that.
We really have, because you guys were in sixth grade, so the younger kids were in fourth grade, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they were young, and that was about the time we went on that camping trip, because it was in the fall, I remember, because Ashley had a friend. We took Ashley's friend with us. Never gone camping with this child before. And I remember her going, we fed her steak and she's like, this is really good. And we're like, don't you have steak? She goes, no, my family's vegetarian. And we both looked at each other like, what are we doing? Why didn't you say anything? These are eighth graders. Like, you're like, you think they would say something. Yes, we've had many camping adventures. We could get into that.
How we many could. Camping that could be adventures? A whole other episode, really.
It could be. How do you camp with people over the years? Yes, for sure.
So we have Miss Jen on the podcast today, and I'm going to continue to call Miss Jen. We have her on the podcast today because, well, for a lot of reasons. I know Mom and I have wanted you on forever since like the beginning. We've thought it'd be so fun to have you on at some point. But then the other thing is you have a perspective we do not have. You have a son, and and this, it's a completely different ballgame, parenting a son versus a daughter. And Mom has tons of information about parenting, but there's one thing she can talk about son-in-laws for sure, and she can talk about parenting, quote unquote, son-in-laws, but not sons raising them up. And we have just been so excited to hear your story. And but before we even get into your story, really, if you just want to tell us a little bit about you and your husband, and even just more about your kids a little bit, that would be awesome.
Sure. So my husband and I have been married for 28 years. His name is Brent. He actually knew Sonia before I did. He grew up with Sonia. But
yes, he did.
Oh, wow. I forgot about that.
He babysat my brother, my baby brother. Isn't that crazy? Awesome.
That's crazy.
So Kevin and I are the transplants to Michigan, but we still live in Michigan, and we've raised our family here. Brent grew up here. I moved from out of state when we got married. We have two kids, Alyssa, who is working as a speech pathologist in Washington, D.C., and Brandon, who is an electrician working in the area locally. He got married earlier this year, so we also have a daughter-in-law, Nadia. Mm-hmm. They got married about 3 months ago now.
That's crazy.
And,
flies.
Time flies. So we are now officially empty nesters and walking that road with our kids, and one married and the other not yet, but working full-time and out of state. So lots going on there. My husband and I both work from home. We do like to camp, as we've already talked about. We like to travel, period, any kind of travel. He likes to fish. I like to read. We both work full-time. We're busy at our church. We do a lot with our church activities. We teach our youth. We're involved in music ministries, lots of different things with the building, and we do a lot. We're busy. But
you do a lot, yes. Whenever I think of the Outer Kirks, I think busy.
Take a breath. Take a breath. That's what I think. Yeah. I think, Jen, take a breath.
That's great. That's great. Well, welcome to the podcast. We're glad to have you here. I think we should just get right into it, Mom, unless you have anything to say. Like you guys are ready to get into just the topic we have today. So we're going to be talking about, and I'm just going to give it to you, Miss Jen, but we're going to be talking about mainly her parenting her son, and just the road that she's walked with him. And I think it's going to be really interesting. So if you want to just begin at the beginning and tell your story, that would be great.
Sure. So Brandon is our second child. So he was born about 2 years after our daughter, and both of my kids were a little bit premature, about 3 weeks premature, and he came home with some interesting, you know, after preemie type challenges, nothing as severe as Alyssa's had been, and so we thought, okay, we're going to be okay. But I like to describe it in hindsight, some warning flags even then. The reason he was premature and the reason he had some of the challenges after birth was because during his in vitro time, the umbilical cord had wrapped around part of the placenta and had actually denied him the full nutrition that a baby gets from the placenta. So it didn't wrap around his neck, but it wrapped around the placenta. Mm-hmm. And I don't have any scientific proof or scientific evidence that that caused any of the challenges that Brandon has experienced in his life, but I believe it certainly contributed. And then there was a very traumatic birth experience as well. They lost his heartbeat during delivery, and it was a pretty traumatic experience. But we got home. He was in a light wrap that they do for preemies that have jaundice, got through a few days of that. And then I would call it for the first two-ish months, he really incubated at home. I don't know how else to describe it. He pretty much slept and ate, didn't do a lot else beyond that. And I think he was probably regaining some of that. Again, I have no scientific proof, but like in hindsight, it just...
Yeah, no, looking back,
it was
for sure.
It was a different post-birth experience than Alyssa had been. And so I think that's relevant to kind of where we started. But, you know, time marched on. He started, you know, doing the things babies do. And we'd had Alyssa in speech therapy, which is ironic because she's now a speech pathologist, because Alyssa talked all the time, a lot, but you couldn't understand anything she said. Like, it was like she had marbles in her mouth. And so we had her in speech therapy, and they were very helpful in helping reduce her frustration and helping us understand her and strategies to minimize frustration, which always escalated the situation. I actually have a special ed background. I'll get back to that. But with Brandon, he was like a silent child. He observed a lot, but he never spoke. He never babbled. He never labeled. He was just silent. He also didn't demonstrate any like progression steps towards any of the typical things you're watching for as a parent. So didn't sit up on time, didn't crawl on time, didn't scoot on time. And then one day I'm standing in the kitchen. We were a little worried, a little concerned, like, what's going on? One day when he was about 10 and a half months old, I'm standing in the kitchen and he walks up to me.
What?
From the other room.
Oh, my lands.
He had never crawled, scooted, pulled up. And one day he's walking.
Wow.
And he did the same thing with talking. We took him to a speech therapist. She's like, he just doesn't want to talk. He's perfectly capable. He'll talk when he's ready. And he talked with perfect diction and perfect vocabulary when he decided to talk, which wasn't until almost 3 years old.
Whoa.
He's what they call a holistic learner. So he only learns when he's got it all. He only demonstrates that he has learned when he has it all. It's actually a different learning style that is very challenging. So, you know, we roll time forward. We get into like preschool and it's like letters. We didn't learn ABC and then DEF and then GHI. We learned all caps and all lower all at the same time, A to Z, all at once, and demonstrated no progress on the way until it was all in there. So.
Wow.
Interesting learning style. Right. So we knew we had a learning style that was unique. That's what we knew.
Makes so much more sense in my head now, though, knowing him. So sorry, go on. This is going to be interesting. I'm going to learn stuff about B.
So we later learned, and there's a lot before then, but we later learned that Brandon cannot just memorize information. He has to understand it in order to learn it. So. Unique learning style, but we didn't find that out till much later. So time marched on and we tried to start the reading process. And in K4, he actually did way better with reading than Alyssa had done. And we thought, okay, we're good. We got this, you know? It was about the middle of first grade when just not getting there with easier words like the and of and those kinds of words where just could not get those. Got hard words, unique words, but not the simple. And it was about the middle of first grade when his teacher came to us and said, I think we have something bigger going on. She identified that there was something more. So we began the journey of figuring out, like, you know, what other kind of help might he need? What might he be struggling with? Started doing a bunch of research, started praying about things, took him to the literacy council. They did some typical, what we call dyslexia markers testing, and they thought he might have dyslexia. So
we thought, well, that would at least make sense. So let's start down that road, assuming he does, and let's see what options there are available. So they recommended an approach called Orton-Gillingham, which is a very expensive tutoring prospect. But there was a new program out that had just come out that was a Susan Barton, like an Orton-Gillingham tutor. You're on a wait list for like 3 years, and
wow.
It's very, very expensive to get that authorization, and they're very rare. And in Midland at the time, there was only one, and she had a 3 year list.
Wow.
So we looked into other options, and there was another program called the Susan Barton, which was a simplified version of the Orton-Gillingham that was easier for like normal teachers and tutors to be able to achieve. And so we actually had a person at the school who volunteered to learn that program and tutor Brandon.
Wow.
And she did. Mrs. Forbes. You'll know her.
Her
an entire
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yes. She invested in that herself and chose to walk through that and helped a lot with those kinds of things. We got on the wait list, but it wasn't until like fourth grade before we were able to get him into the Orton-Gillingham tutor. Mrs. O, also at Calvary, learned after Mrs. Forbes talked to her, there was another person at school that was going through some similar challenges, and their parents were advocating for them. And our small private school really took the ownership of finding a way to help these students so that they could stay enrolled and stay in a normalized, but also be able to help them, and volunteered their time to do that. Mm-hmm. And thank them enough for that willingness to do that. I think that's a pretty rare thing in a small private school like we were in to get those kinds of services that are normal in a public school setting. Mm-hmm. There's a really important moment. This is the Moments Matter My podcast, right?
Exactly. Exactly. We like to hear those.
This journey, this story that really stand out. And one of them was, well, I have to back up a second. So I talked about Brandon's challenges, but I didn't talk about his personality, and I need to go there first because this is important. So he was like the most lovey-dovey little guy that you could ever ask for. He was so obedient. We only had one willful time where we had to spank him, correct him. One.
Wow. But
different than who was willful to the extreme. He was, you know, you distract him over here, he just goes over here. He was very easy to please. He wanted to please. He was just a joy to parent, you know. And I remember he was just so sappy sweet. He's always had a really sweet personality. And I remember one day I was getting ready for church, and I was, you know, he was like three. And I was in the kitchen making my coffee and whatever, and I was in my slip. But didn't even have a skirt on, you know.
Mm-hmm. And Sunday mornings. Woo woo.
He comes out and he like touches my slip, which he thought was a skirt, you know, and he's like, "You're so pretty, Mama."
You know? And, you know,
that was just who he was. He was just easy and a joy and just all of those things. Well, you know, along the journey, when I remember the day where I thought we lost him. I can't describe enough how different he had become in that time when he realized he was different and not able. And not able to do the work that, you know, everyone else seemed able to do when he realized. Mm. And at seven, he said to me, "Why did God make me?"
Oh.
And as a mom, knowing all the truth of, you know, God doesn't make mistakes, I imagine this is like the journey a mom might go through in a different situation where it's a diagnosis of some kind that you can't change or something like that. And the fear, the, you know, you want to solve the problem, the wanting to protect them, all of those things, and wanting their future to be good, and knowing that God doesn't make mistakes, and knowing that yourself, but trying to instill that belief in them. Mm. That began a very hard period that lasted for about 3 years. Mm. It was a daily struggle. There was a lot of anger. There was a lot of frustration. There was a lot of, I can't. Mm-hmm. And it was very, very, very difficult. It was difficult on the whole family. It was difficult on each of us individually in different ways. We ended up taking Brandon to a psychologist who actually did a full battery of testing, which was a very exhausting day, but it was an important thing for two reasons. One, the Lord has given us the wisdom that we needed to have that testing so that Brandon could be legally entitled to services if he needed them. Mm-hmm. All of his life, not just for school, like life beyond school. Mm-hmm. It was very expensive. Our insurance didn't cover it, but we chose to make that investment because we thought it was important. And it did give us, I have a 65-page report, the details of what they found in that testing. And what we learned was there was a more complex challenge than just dyslexia. It was way more than dyslexia. Brennan has actually three diagnoses. He has dyslexia, which kind of everybody knows, you know, you mix up letters and there's more to it than that a little bit. But there's dysgraphia, which is the physical effort that it takes to produce words on paper. Mm. Those two together are really, really, really tough.
Yeah,
I would imagine.
And can't produce. And then there was also a short-term memory deficit. So you put all that together with what we already knew, right? No memorizing, no note-taking, no just doing work over and over, writing letters over and over, writing vocabulary words, writing nothing of those strategies that are typical are going to work. Mm. And so we began this whole journey of how do we figure this out, right? Tried lots of strategies along there. My husband was a huge help to me in that time. I worked full time. I did during that time. He took over most of the household work so that I could work with Brandon during that time, cooking, cleaning, helping with Alyssa, running to and fro so that we could focus on, so I could focus extra time with Brandon, working through different strategies, just trying different stuff, doing lots of research, all of that thing. So we made some progress in that time. We found some things. God was very good to us. You know, I had studied for special ed in college. I never went into that for my career, but God used some of those things that I didn't know he was preparing me for, you know, 10 years before
that.
For sure,
yeah.
Definitely preparing me for. So I have teaching is my natural gift. Mm. And he had equipped me with some, you know, just ideas and strategies and a network of people to connect with, to ask questions and strategies and different things. So one of the biggest things I learned in all of that part of the process is that I've kind of described, I was researching, we had lots of people praying with us about it. We were doing lots of doctors, lots of testing, lots of research, lots of stuff. I myself was praying a lot, but I hadn't really given it over completely to the Lord. I was still trying to fix it. I was still trying to help. I was just trying to find the solution, right? Find the fix. And we were up at a church. We camp, as you said. camping in Alpena. And when we're on vacation camping, we always tried to go to church even wherever we were. At least Sunday morning. And we went to this little church that we'd been to several times before. And the pastor that day was preaching a sermon about persistence in prayer. And he told the story of the friend at midnight, the parable. And he told a personal story of their church and how they were trying to start a Christian school and how they'd been praying for years about that in their little community and how the Lord had finally, mind-blowingly, answered their prayer. Mm. And I'm not a super emotional person. It takes a lot to make me cry. It takes a lot for me to show emotion, especially in public. But that day, the Holy Spirit just, I mean, I became Hannah. Mm. In that. And I went forward, just broken. I didn't know what else to do. I didn't know how else to help. I didn't know how else to, where to go next, you know. And my kids and my husband are like, who is this person? Like, what's like, they had no idea what was going on in my heart, right? And this kind elderly woman came up and prayed with me, and I couldn't even express what I was feeling. But in that moment, I fully surrendered the need to the Lord. And then that day, literally, we were driving around. Paul Harvey came on the radio and he said something. I don't even remember exactly what it was, but he was like talking about some study they had just come across and blah, 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 blah. And my husband and I both looked at each other and were like, that's it? That's the answer. Like literally within an hour after the church service, the Lord very clearly, it was like, click.
That's so crazy.
Through Paul Harvey. That's amazing.
Such a random thing. And if I told you like all the connectedness of it, but it was as clear as day that the Lord had just answered our prayer, like that he was going to get us through this. And he had just been waiting for me to surrender that last piece. And I'll tell you, the guilt that I then felt over that delay. And I had to learn that lesson. And unfortunately, the Lord has had to teach me that lesson several times of that, you know, self-reliance and how I don't even realize I'm doing it. I just get doing and I just get doing and I just get doing and then not really giving it over and laying it at the feet. So, yeah, there's that. Then it became about helping Brandon to accept that God had made him good. And that his best was all that God required. And whatever that best looked like. And it was going to be different than other people's best. The psychologist, who was not a Christian, actually helped with that a lot. He gave Brandon some belief. That he's like, dude, you probably can't be an English teacher. Probably wouldn't recommend.
No.
Do. You know, and he gave him that hope back that he would be able to be a man and to provide for his family and have purpose and be able to do that. And that was really important for him belief-wise. You know, parents can say it, but you can't make them believe it. And the day I knew we kind of had him back was there was a day he'd become very self-centered. He had become very, like I said, very angry, very sullen. Because there was a whole eye thing going on at that time, too. We learned he was legally blind in one eye, and we were doing all the patching stuff and trying to fix that, too. Another.
Wow.
Yeah. So he had a lot going on.
Yeah.
And so there was a day at school when Mrs. Reese, the principal, came to me and said, hey, I saw Brandon do this thing today, and I hadn't seen that in a while from him. And I was like, he's back. He's back. Knew he was going to be okay. Like he himself, like not based on us, not needing us, was going to be okay.
Wow.
And there's a lot. I mean, there's so much to, you know, I've learned. There were things, you know, practical things around how to help him. One of the most pivotal things, someone loaned me a movie. It's an Indian movie with English subtitles. It's about a little boy who has similar. It actually described what dyslexia feels like, which I couldn't understand. My brain doesn't work that way. I'm like 100%
right,
verbal.
Right. You know, like, yeah.
Totally different. And so it does a really good job of explaining that and explaining why the frustration from feeling like a failure comes from. And the psychologist was really able to help us get out of Brandon the things that made him feel like a failure. And one of the simple things we learned was, you know, the teachers gave us all kinds of strategies like, hey, let's have him do his work. And then correct it, and then we'll give him like partial credit for doing the work the second time corrected with your help so that he could pass, right? So he would learn, especially where it was like it has to build on and build on and build on. So he did the same amount of work and more again. And one of the things we got out of working with a psychologist was identifying what was it that made him feel like the failure. And we learned one of the triggers for him was the fact of having to erase his own work. Simple strategy became we gave him a new paper or I erased for him. It was the having to do away with all that effort he had done.
Yeah.
The erasing made him feel like a failure.
Wow.
So practical things like that that really helped us with, you know, how do we help him cope with this? And it, you know, there were some survival things. I remember in fourth grade, you know, when you get all the math papers, right? We would set a pile of dimes on the table. And I was, this is full bribery, okay? So parenting strategy.
That's right. It works.
And what we did was I just put a pile of 10 dimes, however many sides of papers we had to finish. There was a dime on the table for every side of a paper. And the only rule was finish it without a meltdown. If you finish it without a meltdown, you earn a dime for every page we get. Not about how well you do it, not about how fast you do it, just doing it without having a meltdown.
Wow. And that puts his worth too, just thinking about it now, like it puts his worth in actually not what he can produce, but just in his character, which is really, really cool that you caught on to that. Like, that's amazing.
Yeah. And building that, you know, building the work ethic and helping him. And there was also a balance with, you know, sometimes we were given, I would say, more coping strategies than I wanted for him. Because one of my concerns was, I don't want to just get him through school and pass. I want him to be able to be successful in life. He's not always going to have like a school box and accommodating teachers to help him. Like, he has to be able to functionally read. He has to be able to do functional math. He has to be able to do, you know, whatever it is that God's going to call him to do. And so we tried really hard not to overcrutch. Right. And I think there's a tendency with some to take the easier path of overcrutching, but in the long run, it doesn't serve the child as well in the end, because they don't actually learn what they need to become their own functioning full without needing those crutches forever.
Something you said earlier before we started recording too, and I said, wait, stop, let's talk about that on the podcast. You said something really important that I don't want to forget as we get, you know, continue our conversation, Jen, but you said something that was really interesting about when you were helping other people try to cope with these things about the teachers. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, by the time we started turning the corner, which what I would say was about sixth grade, where I felt like, man, we've got a good rhythm. He's doing okay now. We've got this. We've really learned a lot. I felt really burdened to share what we had learned with some others who I knew were struggling. And so I started a support group at the school called Measures of Grace with the intention of trying to help parents have some hope through this process, give them some practical strategies, share what I had learned, try to glean from them things that they may have learned. And we ran that for a while, but I found that, and I do not want to be disparaging in anything I say, so I'll be very careful to be careful with that. The Lord equipped me in some unique ways to help Brandon, I think, differently than many are able to help their own children in a similar circumstance. Mm. And that's criticism of them. That's just the journey we walk.
Right. Everyone's journey is different. That is very true.
Right. And so I don't know that you could expect others to do, again, and I'm not meaning to be disparaging, but to do what I would have done without help, to be given help to understand what they could do, or maybe even able to do that, either financially, practically, a number of things, right? But what I learned in that group was there was a tendency to have this expectation that the teacher alone should be able to solve the problem and should be able to teach to every student. And I'm a teacher, so like I know you got to teach to the middle, right? And I would agree there are good strategies that can be helpful for all students and that would be beneficial. We actually did a really funny test case with Alyssa. So by this time, Alyssa had passed, you know, life science, biology, advanced biology, flying color. She's a book learner. She can memorize anything. She has a nearly photographic memory. It's really unfair. And
yeah,
we love her anyway. No, we do.
Everything's easy. So when we got to needing to know the diagram of a cell for Brandon, like I said, he can't learn it until he learns all of it, and he has to understand it to learn it. Mm. So there was this really cool little cartoon diagram up in the corner of the textbook that we had that actually compared a cell to a manufacturing environment. And when Brandon was little, he only watched reality shows. Other than Bob the Builder, he only watched like real stuff, like trucks doing things and all these things. He wouldn't actually like watch any like just made up stuff, right? So one of the shows he loved to watch was How It's Made. There was a show on that was like, how do they make whatever, you know, all these things. And he was fascinated by, you know, manufacturing technology. And so this little diagram of the fact, it was like the mitochondria is the conveyor belt and the, you know, this is the packaging area and this is the shipping area. And the mitochondria is the powerhouse of the cell. It's like the, you know, so I blew that diagram up. I'm like, we can work with this because he'll understand the analogy, you know? So it's like the ribosomes are the packers and the lysosomes are the shippers and the mitochondria is the energy power pack of the cell. He's like, yeah, I can do that. So he passed that test and I was like, fantastic. Then I got thinking about that and I'm like, you know, if all of our teachers taught cell theory that way, I'll bet even the memorizers would learn it deeper, better, because I can never forget that the mitochondria, I too had passed college level biology, but I didn't remember what did what. Like, I remember the nucleus, you know.
I could never. No, the nucleus is this thing and amoeba is that thing. I had to draw it once. I don't know.
Yeah, you know it for the test and then it's gone. You don't use it, right? And then today could draw that diagram. And so we tested Alyssa with it. I said, do you remember what a mitochondria does? She's like, no. Like, do you remember what a lysosome does? No. Then we showed her the diagram and I was like, if you were taught this way, would you have learned that and remembered that? And she's like, yeah. So, you know, there's of that, but then there was also this other extreme of like, parents should have no responsibility. This is what we pay our teachers to do. They should just do all work that's required and they should be more flexible and accommodating and not have any expectations for my student. And there's a balance, right? Working in a situation like this, certainly teachers can use teaching strategies that address more students who do have different learning styles. Even with or without disabilities, children do have different learning styles. And I think there's some better strategies that can be applied. And I do see a trend in that in certain schools, and I think that's good. But there also has to be some balance of expectation of what teachers should have to do or even can do practically in a classroom of students and not creating like a resentment thing. And I remember parent-teacher conferences, you know, teachers crying with me over, you know, they saw the effort that Brandon was putting in and wanted him to succeed and wanted him helpful and went overboard to help us with what they could because they saw that effort. I think too many times when the parents approach it as a, you know, it's that entitlement philosophy, right? Like, well, I shouldn't have to do the work because it's too hard. Well, that's not life.
Yeah.
And it's also important, I think, to, especially for those that are listening, is to realize that God blessed you, even though you might not see it as a blessing, but he gave you that child. He gave you that issue because he knew that you could be the parent, you can be the advocate, you can learn the hard things and do the hard things. Just like, yes, you had your education behind you, but you still had a ton you had to learn. But God gave you this little boy and he also gave you the abilities to help him. And
I think, you know, a couple other things that stand out, like I was so prideful going into parenting, you know, it's like so many other roads that you hear about in parenting. I have not had to walk other hard roads that other parents had to walk. But I think there's some commonalities that you cannot understand certain things until you have walked that road, right? Yes. And I do think part of the reason that God asks us to walk certain roads is so to equip us and to uniquely help others. And even there's another book that someone gave us early on in the journey. It's called The Gift of Dyslexia. And I would say that just because my abilities that God gave me are more typical for the normal learning environment, they're not more valuable. I have holes that I cannot do. I don't visualize things. I can't see things. I have gaps in what I can do. And I can't learn how to do those things. I've tried. I cannot learn how to do those things. They're just, God didn't make me that way. My brain doesn't work that way. I cannot make it understand things that way. My husband and I, who's a lot like Brandon, are at cross purposes all the time trying to describe stuff to each other, right? Because like, I'm like, use your words. Yes. He's like, doing this, you know? And I'm like, use your words. I can't understand it. Draw me a picture. Use your words. Uh-huh. I can't understand a visual that's being described if it's not clear. And so Brandon, much like that, and in the career he has chosen, an electrician, there are things he is just able to do because of the gift of he sees everything in 3D. That's one of the concepts of dyslexia, is they see everything in 3D. That's why letters are hard, because letters are 2D.
Hmm.
So letters are like floating in space. That's why words like sight words like the and of are hard, because you can't sound them out. You have to memorize them.
Right.
Wow.
Right.
Interesting.
They're just floating letters out there in the ether. He sees everything in 3D, like visually in his mind, which is great for certain things. Like when you're trying to build something, or when you're trying to like imagine how you need to bend conduit to go around a pipe and this. Do you know how long that would take me? I literally would like 50 times and I would still not get it right. Right. Like I would just give up. Right. So I think there's that mindset of, it's not just that, you know, we call it a disability, but it really is a different ability, right? Different sets of abilities, and different people have different things. You know, there are other kinds of layers of that that can be so, but I do believe that God has created different learning styles on purpose, because if we were all the same, we would have a lot of holes in our society, you know? People that couldn't do certain things if we were all the same. So if you can look at it with that perspective and find those things that are, like Brandon can build anything. He always could. Like he could build these connects contraptions that you're like, what? Like with no pattern. Like I have to follow the pattern and I'm like, okay, part E goes into part D.
Yes.
He imagines it and then he built it, you know. He would do Minecraft upside down and backwards, you know, and be doing these like complicated like roller coaster thingies. And I walk in the room and he's like upside down and backwards on the controller. And I'm like, oh, I can't even, right? Like I can't even do that. So yes, lots of gifts.
Amazing. Wow.
Lots of gifts. Just a few things that, so Brandon was in my drama class for quite a few years. We started as a freshman, and what I could tell you about Brandon is my sets were amazing every year that Brandon was in, right, in drama, and he'd drag his dad into it, and I had, and then his dad is a twin, and his twin brother would come, and we'd drag my husband in just to, you know, hold on to things, make sure nobody, you know, things stayed, you know, where they were supposed to and all that kind of stuff, and not taken down too much, or remember where something else goes when we had to put it back together, right? Because these guys were just fantastic. But I just remember things about Brandon and his heart and his love for all things sports and all things fan-based. He was like the rowdiest at our pep rallies, and he could do that, and he knew that, and he was so, you know, just excitable, and he got people around him excited, and I just love that about B. I call him B. Sorry, I keep saying that. His name is Brandon, but he has been just a special guy in my life, because our families are just been close, but I've watched him go through these struggles, and I've watched my friend Jen just walk alongside of him. Jen, I know you say these things, and you're very humble, and you are very humble about these things, but you just have some gifts that you did an amazing job with that young man. He works hard. He does excellent things for the Lord, his heart, even in choosing, you know, his line of work. Like you said, he can see three 3D, you know, and he could figure those things out. He was so excited that he called me to tell me he passed his test. I was so excited. I was like, Brandon's calling me. And, you know, I love that we can just have that friendship still, you know, even as he's married, He said, I asked him how marriage was going. He goes, it's so fun. It's awesome. I'm so glad, bud. Like, that is awesome. I'm so thankful. And I'm thankful for the part you had in his life, because I do watch, I've had, relatives, nephews and nieces who have struggled through school, and they didn't have the mom. They didn't have the resources that you gave your child and the success that you helped him with. And I hope and pray that you do finish that book that you've started. You have the outline, because I think you're an amazing resource for people. And it is Measures of Grace and how God gave you the grace through this journey. And I just thank you. Thank you so much for sharing your story about Brandon with us. And thank you, Brandon, if you do listen to this, for allowing Mom to talk about it, because you know, we love him and we think he's this really special guy.
Yeah. Do you, one quick question, because yes, Mom mentioned your book that you wrote an outline for that you want to have one day, and I think that's important to say because that's amazing. It's called Measures of Grace. Do you want to expound on that? Like, just to tie everything up from this, like, incredible story. I don't even need to repeat everything Mom just said, but why Measures of Grace?
So my mom had always told me the story of when my dad went to Vietnam and how she had to trust God through that. She was expecting when he went to Vietnam, and he was gone for a little over 2 years, and didn't know if he was going to come home or not. She didn't really have much economic means, and how much she had to depend on the Lord and how the Lord was faithful through all that time. Lots of stories along her journey around that. And I'd always been taught this, that God will give you the grace for anything he calls you to walk, right? And I came up with that title because we're not promised the same amount of grace per person. We're not promised the same prescription, but our God is the perfect physician, and he knows the perfect prescription for each one of us, because he knows us through all of time. He knows the end of the story. He knows what we need along the way. And he does provide those measures of grace, the measurements of grace that we will need along the way. And that comes in a number of forms. It comes in, resisting our own will, because there's a lesson we need to learn. It comes in help people who come alongside to help. It comes in, equipping for whatever it is. And I've seen this in other people's lives too, how God is always faithful to help people through what he calls them to. We can't handle these difficult things on our own. We just can't. And we have to depend on measures of grace, and he's faithful to provide that for us. And in telling Brandon's story, I think that's my most, I have many other examples I could provide, but that's the most significant one. And just to encourage other people that if God has called you to walk a similar journey, that he will provide those measures of grace for you too. They'll be different than the ones he provided to us, but any difficult road or easy road, right? God knows the perfect prescription. He gives us easy roads. He gives us hard roads. We all have some of each, and that we can really depend on him to be faithful to give us exactly what we need.
That's awesome. You said something at the beginning or forgot about, but our crazy little Jenna attached herself to Brandon. And I feel like in my life, she's been a measure of grace, period, because she's taught me, right? And she just loves on people no matter what. And she will fight for whomever. And I know she fought for Brandon. And I love it that, the two older girls played volleyball. Jen worked and she would meet us at the games, but I got to pick up Jenna and Brandon after school. And I'm telling you, those poor kids got made fun of all the time because they were always together, but it was always just friendship with them. And it was great. And I always knew the minute Brandon thought he was comfortable enough in my car to take his shoes off, I'd be like, Brandon, oh, sorry. Back on. but
such a boy thing.
Such a boy thing. Such a boy thing. And that is something very different between boys and girls. But it was fantastic. We always had such a fun drive to away games and, you know, fill them up with snacks and, you know, get them to the right places. And we had a lot of fun times together, the three of us anyway, on our way to those games.
That was important too, both for building his confidence and giving him something outside of all the effort he was putting in to just have fun at. And that's another little piece of wisdom that we always tried to prioritize some physical activity and some things he could feel successful at it, because success breeds more success and confidence, right? Feeling like you're fitted.
For sure.
So that was super important. Having those friendships built through classmates and through sports and those kinds of things, and drama, all of those things was super important for him as well. So I would also advise quickly, parents, don't just prioritize schoolwork.
Yeah, no.
You do need other things, even if it makes time difficult, but they do need those other things. Yeah.
No, he thrived in those things, and you saw his confidence grow over time.
And that helped his confidence in the other area. So,
That's awesome.
It's amazing to me that, you know, I didn't know most of this story. I mean, I knew that, like, he had dyslexia. That's about, like, the most I knew. I knew he struggled with, like, different school things. But now as he's an adult, like, you wouldn't know. Like, he sustains his wife. Like, he has a wife and he sustains their household. And he has done really well financially just with his job since getting out of school. And it's amazing to me, like, that he didn't feel stuck in one place. Like, you as the parents, I could just see that you allowed not only him, but Alyssa too, just the freedom to choose what they really desired and dreamed to do. And that's huge. I think that is amazing to see that now in both of them, not just Brandon, but that they're both living in some ways their dreams that they wanted to from the beginning, from high school on, and just seeing that transformation. Like, you wouldn't know that he struggled so much in school. Yeah, just crazy. Well, thank you for getting on and telling your story. I think there's just so many good wisdom nuggets in what you, every time I talk to you, I always feel like I come away very encouraged, because you also talk about what God does in your life, not just, oh, I do this and this and this. But this is really what God brought you through, and it wasn't easy. I can imagine you being very vulnerable on this episode, and so I think from both Mom and I, I'm speaking for both of us, we just really appreciate that.
Very much so.
So with that said, thank you all for listening in on today's episode. If you enjoyed hearing us chat or any part of this conversation, really, please let us know by on Apple Podcasts. You can get on there and scroll all the way down to the bottom, and you can leave a review and a rating. And you can also comment on any of our social media posts and ask questions or even tell your own story. We would love to hear that. And we would even read it if you wanted us to on the podcast. So you are welcome to that. We know that moments matter, and you never know which moments will end up mattering the most. So we're here to give you actionable steps toward taking them to the next level for the present and for eternity.